I'm not discounting anyone, but if I sense poverty in your life, I will not invest. Because the money that an hungry man sees, the first thing he goes to buy is food.
In this part of the world, nobody gives you a blueprint. You hustle, you pivot, you survive, or you get left behind.
That's what people, when they come to Nigeria, they just complain, they complain. I'm like, come fix it with us.
Yes.
I've never had an incident of almost being killed in Nigeria. In America, multiple times. Nigeria is so unsafe. I'm like, really? You live in Texas, motherfucker?
Bayo Adedeji understands this language better than most. From stocking shelves at Walmart's Fortune 1, to building products, selling shoes, frying yams, running restaurants.
When you fly from here to Ivory Coast, there is more cargo going on the plane than humans.
And walking away from a $300,000 Amazon job to lead a struggling travel startup in Nigeria that was on life support.
Wakanda has 44 locations in Nigeria. 44. I'm counting. The goal this year is to get to 60 locations. The question is, why does the tech company have 60 locations?
Today, Wakanda operates in 30 plus countries and has raised over $50 million because Bayo thinks like an entrepreneur, moves like an entrepreneur, and executes like a lion.
You cannot discount the African behavior. You can't. It goes back to customers. It's understanding the customer before you build innovation.
Bayo Adeyeji believes that a customer is king and speed is everything. In this conversation, we unpack luck, faith, entrepreneurship, and why African flights cost a premium.
Europe has domesticated their flights. Domestication of flights within Europe means that when you fly to Lagos to Abuja for 100k, is the way they fly within Europe. If we do that in West Africa, trust me, a lot of chances will go away. The price of tickets.
And the brutal truth about building in this continent. This is the Frankly Business Podcast, where Africa's biggest minds come to talk money, business, and the future.
You're very much welcome again to the Frankly Business Podcast. And I have the co-host of the Frankly Business Podcast. It's a brand new face. I'm sure I'm going to surprise you.
Yes, I work as an innovation consultant and business humorist. Been privileged to work in this capacity with at least one of the top three organizations in every major sector of the Nigerian economy. I got into the Frankly Business Podcast as a guest. Now I'm a co-host. I just added another title to my feather. My prof, your work is showing. But today we have somebody that is blows my mind. His insights, his passion is contagious.
The GCEO of Wakanda, Bayo Adeyeji. You're very much welcome to the Frankly Business Podcast, sir.
Thank you for having me. I'm not an heavyweight, by the way. I'm still a featherweight. I don't have a refinery. I don't have a sugar car. I don't have, I can go on and on. I don't have petrol stations. I don't have a oil well. I don't have a ship. I don't have an airplane. I can go on and on of things I don't have. The heavyweights have it. I'm still working my way to heavyweight.
The weight starts from the mind. You have all of that.
if your mind does not reflect in your bank account, it's not heavyweight in real life. I don't know what you guys are talking about, but I know for a fact I'm still not an heavyweight. I'm on my way though.
Wow. It's an honor to have you on the Frankly
Business
Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
You said you already know the first question you're gonna ask.
Yes. You lost your dad at 2.
Yeah.
Raised by a single mother.
Yes.
How did you become like this? Understanding that a lot of people raised by single parents always give the excuse of the background.
And I think I've said the story many times. I'm lucky. I'm lucky to be raised by a woman that understood, and God bless her memory also, to be raised by a woman that understood the value of education, that understood the value of holding to account, accountability, the value of religion, of setting your feet on a religious path and making sure that you understand the principles of that religion more than the religion itself. And I was raised by a family. I'm the last of six. So I had five elder ones. I'm lucky to have five serious-minded elder ones. We have PhDs in our family. We have people doing very well in engineering. We have people doing well in even in teaching. My mother owned the school. The school is still running till date. My mother died 2023, so 22 years ago. So, and the school is still running. One of us is running the school and is doing very well doing it. We have two schools in Lagos. And again, just raised by a family of people that were entrepreneurs and know how to get stuff done. I think I was lucky. I was lucky to have good examples. My brother was a great example to me. He started a bakery when I was young. He sold burgers, he sold wine, he had a video club. He was always a businessman. And, you know, he never got a job with anyone. He ended up starting his own engineering company, in civil engineering. He renovated Teslim Balogun Stadium, did a couple of big projects in Lagos. Again, I saw that. Those were the examples that I had in front of me. So I'm lucky. I'm seriously lucky. I grew up beside a mosque and opposite my house was a church and down the street was a traditional herbalist. I'm lucky to see the fusion of religion being, living in harmony. I was born Christian. So, I'm lucky. And, you know, I wasn't born with a wooden spoon. Yes, my father died, but we weren't poor, right? We were not rich, but we were comfortable enough that I went to Model College Mirror. That's luck, man. It's like one of my father's friends did it as a favor to my mother because I looked like a tattered kid going to Ogba Grammar School, right? And they sent me there. I'm lucky to have gone to school there. I'm lucky to have passed JAMB and made it to Obafemiolo University. I'm lucky to, I failed JAMB the first year, by the way. I went to Poly first, went to Ire Poly first, you know, and finally got to IFE. I'm lucky to have gotten to IFE. I couldn't get into economics, made it to demography, but I'm lucky to have grown up in a place where, you know, that people were just conscious of life, conscious of what they wanted. Everybody was agile. People wanted education. I'm lucky. I'm lucky to have left that, you know, to have come to Lagos. Sometimes I see me in the right place and gotten a job at EcoBank. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm lucky to have actually been posted to Kano for NYSC. I'm lucky to have gotten a job in Federal Government Girls College, Federal Government College in Kano. I'm lucky to have done that. I'm lucky to have come back to Lagos. I'm lucky that my mother, you know, left a car that I was using to drive around to look for a job. You know, and I call that all luck because if oftentimes some people don't have that. Some people didn't have some of the, I call it the springboard that I had. Now, it wasn't, it didn't have a lot of spring, right? It was, but it was a board. And it raised me above the ground a little bit. And I call that all luck. And that luck, you know, the good thing was I was hungry. I was a hungry kid. It's not, you know, I was hungry not for, I was just hungry for more all through my life. I started my first business when I was like 13 or so. I was lucky that Soulmate, the air cream called Soulmate started in my house. It was one of our tenants. It was a tenant of ours. And he rented it as a factory.
That's what is on my hair right now. That's what I used this morning. I kid you not. No,
so I was his first employee. He says that I was his first employee because when he started, he was the only man starting the business. And he would, I would go play with him in the store. I was maybe GS1 or 2. I'll go play with him in the store and he would teach me how to do it. And he would show me, okay, buy all this out to bottle. I'll bottle it for him. He gave me a business to start. I used to sell his waist nylon, right? Mm-hmm. And I saw him grow. I saw that business start from nothing to something. I witnessed the growth of that business and I'm lucky to have seen that. You know, those are the things that shape the lives of a child and those shape me. Those, you know, I didn't get business principles, the strategy. I didn't get all that, but I got tenacity that look, if you keep at something, if you can hold your leg on the gas, just hold your leg on that gas and just keep going. Don't press the brakes. Just keep going and you will make it or hit a wall. one of the other will happen. But you know, my stopping is not going to be because of the car or the motion or the lack of motion. It's because I hit a wall or because there's no more road. But if there's still road and if there's no wall, we're going, man.
Yeah.
We're going. My leg is on that gas. And that's how I grew up. And you know, I was born Kirubim and Seraphim. I say that quite often. shaped my religious life because they taught me the Bible. They didn't just preach to me. They taught me the independence of religion. Mm. They taught me how to independently seek God and find God and be independent in my opinion about God and my relationship with Him. Mm. I remember the teaching about how your relationship of Elisha and Elijah were totally fundamentally different. The relationship of David and God and Solomon and God, even though they were father and son, was fundamentally different. And how your relationship with God is independent. And that's how I grew up. You know, so I was born to be opinionated. I was born to, my mother also never stopped me from doing co-curricular activity. And I say that often because people stop their kids from doing a lot of stuff in school. My mother never stopped me from going to debates, from representing my school in debates, in quizzes, in anything, in cultural dance. Like I led cultural dance, cultural troops. Again, there was a lot of skills I was not born with. My mother told me that I can learn it. Mm. I won't be the greatest at it, but I'll be great enough at it.
Mm.
And sometimes you can make more money than the greatest at it. Because, you recognize the fact that you are doing it out of learning, not out of skill. Not that because you have the natural ability. So you put more effort. And that's what she taught me. And I remember those words. My brother would say it all the time that you can do it. Right? I started driving at the age of 14. Right? It looks like I reversed the car one day using to eat the wall. He said, hey, looks like you want to learn how to drive, Abby. He learned how to drive. He sent me to go and fetch water with the car. Like, I mean, I was using air to fetch water. He said, now that you can drive, take jerry cans, go fetch water. You know, and I used to take cars to Matori by the age of 15. I used to drive to Matori to go and fix our cars whenever we had issues. They gave me the independence of being an independent adult. They gave me problems when I was a child. Like, Bayo, there's four cars in the house. Four of them have problems. You find a way to take four of them to Matori. We lived in Ogba. And I had to go and figure out whether to go and hire a mechanic to drive with me. And then we'd get the cars to Matori. I have to fix them one day and bring them back home same day. And those challenges shaped my mind as a child that there's no, you can solve problems. There's no hold back. And that's what made me. And honestly, if I'm going to say anything, I would say I'm lucky. You know, I'm going to call somebody. Maybe I'll not call the guy's name. It was somebody's birthday recently and I wanted to wish him happy birthday, on LinkedIn. We don't talk, but I just thought to send him a happy birthday message. And as I opened the message, he's a very popular guy in Nigeria, in the e-commerce space. And as I opened the email, I saw that I sent him an email in 2015 asking to join his organization. Literally. Like I sent it to a friend yesterday. Like I screenshot out, I didn't even know I sent it. Because I was in America. Mm. I was working in retail, but I was hungry to come back to Nigeria in 2015, 10 years ago. And I was sending an email saying, guy, I can help you do this. I saw it. I'll help you drive costs down, help you drive profit, help you increase assortment. And I said those proactively, not because I didn't have a job, but because I just wanted more. Because I was brought up to just want more and to never be satisfied. You know, never be satisfied. Yeah. I know religion teaches us to be satisfied and be content. Not in my own dictionary, man. So aspire for more. Aspire and aspire and aspire for more. It doesn't mean I'm jealous of somebody else's success, but it doesn't mean that I settle for my own success and think that I've arrived and think that I'm the OG because I can buy a house in Lekki or I can buy a house even in Ikoyi. Right? You didn't say, why can't I buy a house in Monaco? Right? Then you buy a house in Monaco, you say, why can't I buy an island? Then you buy an island, you say, why can't I buy Mars? You know, then you buy Mars, but Jupiter is still, you know, but Venus, you know, like, and you start pushing, continue to push the envelope. And if I die in the process of chasing one of them, then I've done well.
That's so instructive.
If you look at what you've done, you've sold shoes, you sold yam, and what motivated you to do that? Because the reason why I'm asking, you've spoken about your background. It was like, it wasn't out of survival. Was he out of survival?
Money.
You had the leverage.
Brother, you had the leverage.
And you went to the street.
Yeah.
You can see, I'm going to tell my editor to add the video so you understand the concept. You sold yams and started from the corporate world. So
no, it didn't just start from the corporate world. You see, there's a difference between from corporate and Fortune 50. Yeah, let's get it right.
So my retail career actually started from 41.
Did you hear
at the time. Yeah.
Did you hear
Walmart
that?
Was Fortune 1 at the time. Walmart was number one most valuable company in America at the time. Yeah. And my retail, I started from Texas Instruments, which was, I think, at the time, number 12. And then, Walmart was number, I moved from number 12 or thereabout to number one, which was Walmart at the time. So I worked for Fortune 1 at the time. And I wasn't satisfied because, bro, I needed more money. I don't do business for anything other than money. It's not a charity. But it's a, yes, I wasn't hungry. I have a life. I have a house. I'm living well, blah, blah. But I wanted more. It's that quest for more. But you see, every business that I do, I always build a financial model ab initio. At the very beginning, mm-hmm. I mean, I have a finance background. Mm-hmm. So I start from modeling out what the potential return of that business is. And once my shoe business, and I'll tell you exact numbers, at the time when I started my shoe business, my net take home was about $60,000 a year. So I made about $5,000 a month at that time, 2009. I was making 60K, 2009, yes. I was making like 90K or 80 something after taxes, after all your deductions, I took 5K home. So I only count my 5K as my real salary. Then I said, okay, what if I did a sale, a one-day sale in Lagos after I witnessed my true Black Friday that I had money? Because I moved to America in 2006, but, you know, I went to school, so you didn't really have money until I started working. So the first Christmas, the first Thanksgiving was the first time that I had money to actually go out and shop Black Friday. So I saw Black Friday, I was like, dang, look at how people are flocking out. I wish Lagosians and Nigerians had this opportunity to shop like this. And I said, what if I bought shoes and I took them to Nigeria and I started buying shoes that day? And April of the following year, which was 2010, we started the first mega shoe sale, right? 4 months after, we started with Facebook and BBM. And I did the first one. The first one, when I converted the money of my total sale to dollars, I had done $32,000 in total sale. My net revenue, my revenue from that was about 50%. I had made $15,000. Remember, my salary was $60,000. So I made 4 months salary or 3 months salary in 1 day sale. Of course, there was a lot of prep behind it. So I did it again. And I said to myself, if I can do 4 a year, I have now doubled my income. Of course, it was stressful. I had to fly to Nigeria. I had to bring shoes in. I had to deal with shipping and all that. But again, bro, I was making money. And that is the driving force. It's not rocket science. It's no, it was about what my life could be better because I was doing something that was productive, you know. And as I tried to expand the business, of course I then made mistakes.
Okay. Tell us about it.
I then made mistakes. I expanded the business. We moved from City Mall to Silverbed and I lost money. Right? I wanted to bring in more shoes. The dollar moved against us. There were things that didn't happen that I could not control. And I learned. But you see, in failure is knowledge. And in knowledge is growth. Mm. And my past failures pushed me to start the next business. But do it and not repeat the mistake of the last. Mm. And as I progressively move forward, I was learning more because you see, nobody has monopoly of knowledge. There's nobody that can teach you what doing can.
Instructive.
So let me say that one more time.
Yeah.
Nobody can sit you in a class and teach you what actually doing can teach you. Actually doing stuff teaches you the true.
How about YouTube video?
Look, it's a know-how, right? It's how you get started. It's like motivation is always good. You know, you can use motivation. You know, the Bible says that faith without work is dead. The Bible recognizes that you can have all the faith in the world and believe in God all you want. But if you don't go out and actually go do the work, it's dead. I call it death. The Bible calls it death without work. So again, when I meet people that tell me that I'm thinking, I hate those words. I'm thinking about it. I'm tinkling, you know, I'm taking my time.
So agility is very important.
Go to market, man. Go to that damn market. Yeah. And that's what I do all the time. I told you, I went to Black Friday. I went to go and shop. Then I had an obsession about TVs. I probably still do. My obsession for TVs is like not normal. I don't think at this point it is normal. Like I just like a lot of TVs, flat screen TVs. Like, yeah. I just bought a 98-inch TV, by the way. And I don't know why. That was my gift for last year to myself. And I was going to the store to go buy a TV. And I had like $4,000 that I wanted to bond that year. Flat screen TVs was quite expensive then. It's cheaper now. And I used all that $4,000 to buy shoes. Literally. Like, I just went to the store, I looked at the shoe, I converted it to Naira, I said, because I wanted to do my shoe sale, I set my price before I started shopping. I said, I want to do my shoe sale at 5,000 Naira or less. Yeah. Mm. And I was like, yeah, let's try it. So I bought it. I think I bought the shoe maybe like $10, maybe $6. Dollar was like one something at the time, maybe 200 or ish. It was the good times, right? I bought my first shoe, bought my second one, found, I was buying female shoes. I bought some male, but mostly female. I know women buy more shoes than men. You know, I know I called my sister. My sister was like, ah, try it. This is okay. Whatever you need, we support. Yeah. And I used the money that I was supposed to use for TV to buy shoes. Literally. Because my personal desires starts to matters less when I find opportunity. Yeah. If you tell me that you go buy the TV in my house because I need money, I will sell the TV in my house. Because if I need money for a project that I believe strongly in, I'll sell the TV in my house. God, not let us get to that point anymore. But I'm just telling you that I love them, but I don't care about them. I talked about those TV because people hold on to the things that they care about and forget the opportunity right in front of them. I will give up what I care about for the opportunity in front of me because I believe in opportunity, right?
That's a lot. But if you look at your experiences, you talked about shoes. How did you transition into YAM? Because your entire story
I think
like
the problem. Let me interrupt you. The problem is that you continue to focus on the product that I'm trying to sell. The product did not matter to me. Till tomorrow, we had the discussion in the office this week. The product doesn't matter. What I'm looking for, I'm a commerce guy. I like to buy and sell. That's it. So all I was looking for it was a commodity that I can sell at scale.
At scale.
A commodity that I can sell at scale. And by the way, I did not find that commodity, right, till I found Wakanda, till I joined Wakanda. Because that's where I truly found a commodity that I can actually sell at scale. That's the truth. And it was a job that became a lifestyle for me, right? Again, you know, but it's a journey, right? And so I went to, from shoes, I went to YAM, from YAM, I went to travel, from travel, I went to beach ownership, from beach ownership, I went to event center, I've gone to beach house, from beach house, I've gone to liquor store rental, to this, but what I'm looking for is that thing that I can sell at scale. And now we've grown Wakanda out to 30 countries. I'm excited. It's a lifestyle.
I have always, well, thought about it and realized that retail is the future. And why do I say that? Because if you notice that a lot of developed nations, with regards to birth rates dwindling, in Africa, birth rate keeps on going up. So I believe that, we would have more franchises coming. We'll have more joint ventures. However, my concern has always been capital flight because who owns the brand owns the wealth. Huh. Now, when you see a brand like Wakanda that is in multiple nations.
I would disagree with you.
Okay.
That who owns the brand owns the wealth. Who sells the brand owns the wealth.
Okay. So I mean that from the position of franchising.
Who sells the brand owns the wealth.
So the bulk of the money
will go out.
A portion of it.
I think that sometimes we get caught up in all where the money goes. I care about what I keep. The rest of it is like inconsequential to me. Like, bro, I'm a buying and selling guy. I'm a middleman, literally. And I think in simplistic terms, I try not to complicate my life. I think in very simplistic terms. I'm a middleman. I buy a franchise. The franchise comes at 1 naira. I sell the commodity at 2 naira. I make 1 naira. The guy collects his 1 naira. Which capital is flying? Where's the capital flying?
So the way we look at it is this. We look at it from the position of So let me use Wakanao.
Mm-hmm.
Wakanao is in quite a number of countries.
Yes.
And believe me, the delight of getting into Abu Dhabi and seeing a Wakanao bus gives you a sensation. You know what I mean? Like, this is Niger, this is us. Yes. So that experience of seeing Niger brands, Nigerian brands
go beyond global, Nigeria.
Yes. We know that certainly because it is in the UAE, it's in the US, it's in Kenya, it means that the value of the Nigeria, because the worth of any nation state is dependent on the brand that is domiciled in it. And that's what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
So what makes America America? It's because of the Apples, McDonald's and the likes that have gone global.
Yeah.
So why we're struggling, I believe, is because we have business. That's why the scale word you use, very, very instructive.
Yeah.
We have businesses that would have done better if they're able to scale. And, well, nation would have done better if the businesses inside are able to scale.
Really? Look, I hear you. I can't follow that school of thought. But I have a contrary school of thought.
Okay.
Not necessarily contrary, but maybe just fundamentally different. I think oftentimes we think about wealth as something that is so far-fetched, and I think a nation's wealth is the spending capacity of its people. Period. America is America today because people in America can afford stuff that Americans make for them. If Apple was a Nigerian company, how many Nigerians can buy Apple? Like, in the true sense, we have 220 million people. How many of that 220 million people can truly afford?
Not London use.
Like a brand new iPhone 16.
Yeah.
And every year, they will still go back out and queue in front of an Apple store to buy the next year's version.
True.
When they still have a valid phone in their pocket. Again, the wealth of a nation is determined by the spending power of its people.
Mm. How do we get... Using Nigeria as a case study, it's always a common lingua in the business landscape. Mm-hmm. We don't have purchasing power, is dwindling.
Mm-hmm.
How do we fix it? Is it the function of the government, the people? What part of the puzzle do we need to fix that will increase the spending power of per capita Nigerian?
I'm not a politician, I'm not an economist. Mm-hmm. So okay. my knowledge might be limited to my sphere, but I'll make an attempt. And I think it goes back to some of the things that he talked about.
Yeah.
It's all about export. Export is controlling your local consumption and export. Mm-hmm. That's how you grow your income. What does that mean? Wakanao has exported itself now. We're selling in the US. I have no employee in the US. Literally. I have none. No, I have some remote guys in tech that live in the US, Canada, and all over the world, but that's tech, and that's what it is. But from a commercial standpoint, I don't have an office in the US, so I have no cost in the US. So if I make $1 in the US, I bring that $1 back into Nigeria to pay my Nigerian employees. That is what you're talking about. That's why I said I cannot fault it 100%. But that is how a country must export more than it imports.
True.
That is how we make money. But you see, to export more, you must change your appetite. You see, a rat that chooses to become a lion must first lose his appetite. Or a cat that chooses to be a lion must first lose his appetite for rats. We have a foreign taste board, all of us. Let's look at what we are wearing. Foreign shirt, foreign pants, foreign shirt, foreign pants. So the material was foreign.
Yeah, foreign, definitely.
The buttons are foreign.
Yes.
Like your glasses is foreign.
Yes.
Your phone is foreign. Our watches are foreign. Our entire dress is foreign. Our livelihood is foreign. What we eat, the rice that we consume is probably foreign. Because we know the difference between foreign rice and local rice. We like foreign juice because it tastes better. Our cranberry is foreign.
Yes.
Our alcohol is even foreign. You don't drink Chelsea Dry Gin. You talk about Glenfiddich 18. By the time you take a look at our lives, we consume everything foreign. Now we start to argue and say that the quality of the foreign is better. And I said that we still want to remain a cat.
Mm. Mm. You've worked as an entrepreneur and as an intrapreneur.
Mm-hmm.
For those who are watching, he's worked as an employee.
I'm an employee.
He's an employee and also an entrepreneur. What? There's always this argument about 9 to 5, starting your business, and Nigeria, remember the peculiarity of Nigeria. More than 60% of the Nigerian economy is driven by small businesses.
Yeah.
And if you think of that, it means that vast majority of Nigerians are business owners. Should I use the word business owners or self-employed?
For terrible reasons.
Yes.
For terrible reasons.
Yes. Self-employed. How have you been able to combine both? Have you managed both and done well in both?
Mm-hmm.
And what's your advice for somebody who's looking at coming into business, who is also an employee, or somebody who is looking at becoming an employee, who's been in business and has failed and I've said, oh, I'm tired of trying. Let me just get somebody to give me the paycheck.
Mm-hmm.
Balance. What's your advice?
So I'll start from the very beginning, and I think I'll go back a little bit. In every job that I've watched, they've never counted my vacation days. You know, in America, it's 20 days vacation or 30 days, based on your negotiation. Never counted for me. I always take more time off work. I don't know what that means, but like, I always take more time out of the office. Then it was not remote, right? Days of working. There was no remote, work from home. There was work from home. At the tail end of my U.S. career, there was work from home a little bit when you can. But my bosses never looked for me. I was such a great employee that my boss always just says that I just know when you're not around because the energy in the building is cold. I was such a great employee that nobody looked for me because when I'm there, I will give you 1,000%. Do you understand? Like, so when I tell you that, man, I'm taking 2 days, man, I need a break. Nobody will argue with you because my output far exceeds what I was paid. I want to tell my boss that, guy, when am I getting promoted? And the guy starts saying, oh, buy all, we don't have budget. One complaint, when I was leaving, I remember that the deal we signed was that I was going to become a director, blah, 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 in 1 year. And after 1 year, 1 year on the dot like this, I went to the guy's office. I said, guy, it's time to, 1 year has reached. The guy said, and I'm going somewhere, right? The guy said, oh, there's no director position open, blah, blah, blah. I said, Benny, that means that... The next week, the guy came and gave me a check for $20,000. They called it retention, bonus, whatever. And I said to him that, if I'm this good, that you're giving me 20K off the charts, right? Promote me. No, there's no position. Maybe it was glass ceiling, maybe it was racism, maybe it was whatever. But you see, they could not discount my work. My output could not be discounted. That I was so good. I was so good to a point that I could not be ignored. Now, when I now tell you that everybody in the office knew I had my own business at the time in the US, they knew I fly to Nigeria to go and sell shoes. Yeah, it was public knowledge because I was on Facebook, I was everywhere running ads. But you see, they allowed me because the output that I was giving them I was not distracted. You cannot say that buyer is distracted. So that's number one. My 9 to 5. Is the one that takes care of my family. The rest is experiment or was experiment. It could work, it might not work, but I was funding that experiment with my 9 to 5. So the priority is my job. Till tomorrow, everybody knows. If Wakana requires me for Thanksgiving, if I can't make it home, my family lives in America. If I can't make it home for Thanksgiving, I'll fly my family in. We'll do Thanksgiving here because we have to do Black Friday sale here. Yes. My wife will tell you, my wife said to me that, I think your first wife is Wakanao, and then I am your second wife. That's my dedication to my job is, cannot be questioned. Even now that I own multiple other businesses, you cannot question that I'm not, nobody uses the name of that my business to call me, they call me with Wakanao. Wakanao,
yes, everybody does
that. Wakanao is my number one, I am paid to do that job. I am paid, they compensate me with money to do that job, so I must do it and deliver. And when peradventure we miss our target, I will go and apologize and say, guy, Nigeria happened to us. I am responsible to what they've given me. Now, the one that I now run by myself, I hire people to run it for me. Yes.
And I also expect for them to do it exactly.
I would lie to you, you are fire, man. You don't do my job. Because, my son, when I say fire, I don't mean literally. Like, before somebody thinks I'm going to kill someone. No, I don't mean that literally. I mean that the expectation of output is the same expectation I put on myself.
The demand.
That's why when people work with me, they say, I'm a tough guy to work with. Bro, if I put that expectation on myself, what would I expect of you that I'm paying? That I'm the one making sure that you're paid. Are you joking? Exposure, travel, all that gives you the ability to scale out and see more. But you see, I always say that I wish my folks can be as hardworking as the guy that has a shop in Mandilas. That has a parking shop in Mandilas, that has a shop in Balogun. Because they have a new level of grit. They have their level of grit. They just don't have the education to know they can do more. Because every man can do more. Every woman can do more. Everyone can do more. Everyone, there's more inside you that... You know, you asked me about energy and said, how do I get my energy? And I said to you that you have the same energy that I have. It doesn't mean you have the same temperament. People confuse temperament for energy. Right? No, it's different. So when we're both pushing a rock, if they give us a rock to push, I might push mine and scream. You might push us and grin. You might push us and be quiet. But the real truth is that who is actually moving the rock is the one with the energy. Not the man screaming, not the man shouting. If the man that is quiet is the one moving the rock, because he went and got a forklift to push it. And we were there. He's the one that has the energy. We don't. Because we can't move the rock. We have a principle. It's called result is everything. Everything.
Your seven principles.
Yes.
Immediately, I saw that. I'm like... This is...
I'm ex-Amazonian. Yeah, what do you expect? I'm ex-Amazonian.
Exactly.
What do you expect?
Exactly. And one that caught my attention, in fact, we discussed about it, was frugality.
Yeah.
Because just yesterday, I saw an auditor put out on,
Social
media.
But hello, the guy that spent $400K...
You make heaven, sir. Do anything to make heaven. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
What happens when...
Probably once, but okay.
What happens when... A startup gets funding. Is there a spirit? Should I use Yoruba to translate this? Is there something that comes?
Can see I'm stretching.
Is it because you Wakana has got, you know,
50 mil dollars.
Yes, and you see how. So I don't want to call names, but somebody got some particular amount of money, and 70-80% of it cannot be accounted for in 1 year.
Yeah. Frugality means that we don't spend money we don't have. It means that, you see, a lot of people come approach me for investment and I don't do it. And they say why. Sometimes I can't tell them out of not breaking people's heart. If I sense poverty in your life, I would not invest. Because the money that an hungry man sees, the first thing he goes to buy is food. It's not because he...
Sorry, are you saying there's no hope for the poor?
I didn't say that.
Just kidding.
I didn't say that.
Yeah.
I'm not discounting anyone, but I'm just telling from an investment standpoint because I'm thinking about my money. And the way I describe my money to people is my money is an opportunity cost when I invest it. It means that I am taking money from myself. Because I'm not a fund, I'm not a VC. So I'm taking money from my salary and the revenue that I got for my business and I'm giving it to you instead of betting on myself. So the opportunity cost is me. So if I'm going to give you this 50 million, 20 million, 10 million, 5 naira, it must, instead I'm doing charity work. It's a different story because that one is a giveaway. I don't do giveaway because I don't have enough yet. You see, people must get beyond the scale of the human need. I always tell folks that oftentimes the guys that are doing business today needs to go get a job too. I didn't say they should stop doing their business. I said they should get a job too. A job allows you to feed your family, pay school fees, take care of your kids. Hopefully you get a good job, a good paying job, right? Allows you to do the basic necessity of life that you're not hungry. So when you get investment, You're not taking that investment to first go and shock the things that are chasing you. You can really, truly invest the money in the things that the business needs. Oftentimes, people get investment and they say they go rent an apartment. Then where were they living before?
Before the investment.
Where were they not driving a car before? Now, some people are greedy. There's greed, true. There's nothing you can do about greed. If a man is greedy, no matter how much he has before, if he gets more, he's going to spend it. That's the reality, right? But I feel that oftentimes people, you know, also get $1 million and they blew through it very fast because they get trigger happy.
The burn rates of some startups.
That's shocking. So it will shock you. They spend money on customer acquisition and the customer just leave because it's not true acquisition. You just spend numbers to spin the numbers so that you can do the next round. I'm a little bit of a different businessman. I've technically never personally raised money for my businesses. What kind of has raised money? It was raised by the guys before me, right? I just came with the money, right? So technically, I've not gone out to go raise $5 million, $10 million. Because oftentimes when I'm talking to investors, our conversation always goes sideways. When they say, oh, so can this money return in 3 years? I say, guy, this is a 7 or 8 year journey. I can't lie. If you're not going to drop it, don't drop it. Because again, I'm not desperate.
Yeah.
I'll tell you the truth, man. Like, this one, I'll tell you the one that I feel can come out in 12 months. You say, I don't believe you. I say, you'll come out in 12 months. But I'll tell you, I have a current construction project that I'm working on. I'm reconstructing one of my beach resorts. It's going to be nice. It's going to be super beautiful.
Can't wait to have
it. It's going to be my most beautiful creation.
Wow.
I'm even excited myself. Talking about it makes me...
Wave Pro Max.
Yeah. I'm looking for a name. So
Wave Pro Max.
Wave Pro Max. I'll think about it. We're trying to raise money, trying to pull money together, blah, blah. So one of the guys that we're talking to raise money, we got on the call, we talk. In the middle of the call, I just stopped talking and I let the CEO talk. The CEO just took it away because, shoot me. Just going back and forth. So the guy came to site last night. He called me, like, where are you? I said, I'm on site. He came and he saw that they were casting. And he said, but I thought you said you didn't have money. I said, the work will never stop. I get paid every month. If I have to take a portion of my salary to put it there, I have other businesses. If I take a portion of their profit and do it there, we will do it. What will happen is that the timeline to launch will be extended, but we will open. As a businessman, we will find a way to open. We will open with that dream that I have. It will be achieved. And by the way, sorry to get a little religious.
No problem.
I like God so much.
Love it.
The Bible says that, look, he that has started a good work within me will bring it to completion. I don't know the way I will get to the end, but I am sure that if I continue to do the work, I will get to the end. I said I will do the work. I will not sleep at home and cry about lack of money. If I don't have money, we'll be using shovel to move sand every day. We're doing one block, doing two blocks. Yeah, we get to the end. We will open August 22nd. And I set my open dates ahead of time. Because again, faith without work. The Bible says that without faith, it's impossible. Please God. Number six, God must believe he exists. And it's a rewarder for those who diligently seek him. I don't diligently seek him, but I believe. But he says without faith. And I talk about faith quite a bit. I talk about faith. Faith is the evidence of things hoped for. Of things not seen. You can't see it. You envision it. And then you chase it. And then you get it. And that's what drives bio. We're talking at the site like 2 days or 3 days ago. Somebody said, somebody will look at you and say, you're not religious. But you, I know that. Think about Shelley's wife is my kasam.
It cannot, I want to say this in Yoruba. I can't say it in English, maybe you translate to Yoruba.
That's what I grew up with.
That uncle.
Yeah. My mother is coming. That was the casual that really starts. I'm 91. I know it's offhand.
For those that may not be familiar with KNS is a. It's a Christian.
It's a white garment church. These people hate.
Yes. And meanwhile, one of the things that made them really popular was a song, Apata.
That's the church I grew up in.
Yes.
And look, what the church taught me is trust God, have faith, do the right, read your Bible, Know your Psalms. Mm. Know it offhand. So that when the devil comes, you use the Bible to defend him. I don't know if the devil is coming anywhere, but I don't go there again. But I still believe in those principles. You know, and whenever they ask me to come and speak in the White Garment Church, I am excited to go. I'm excited because the fundamentals is just there. Mm. It's independent Christianity. Independent Christianity. Mm. And for me, I tell people that when all roads are blocked, we'll fast. I will pray. Mm. I don't need to go anywhere. Mm. And I know that how you might fast on top of your matter. You might just die. You might just die. Because God said, we'll say, he's fasting.
Did you hear that? He shocked God.
He shocked God.
He shocked God.
By all. You must take this one seriously. Because he knows that I just walk in faith. I just do my shit in faith. That if I'm now stuck and I'm now like, because that car has now hit a wall. Mm. I can't hit that wall. And when I see that wall, I say, I can't even move this. I try to move it myself. I can't move it. I call people to help me to move the wall. I can't move it. I go to the only thing I know that can save because I don't have parents. Mm. I don't have anybody to give me money. I don't have anybody to give me money. I don't have any. That's why I don't know my account number of hand. Nobody has asked me for it to say I want to transfer you money. You know, so they don't ask me. We're having a meeting yesterday. Everybody was giving opinion. I said nobody's talking about the customer. Mm. Nobody. Let us talk about the customer. Why? How will the customer react? What is the customer's decision? Why is the customer doing this? Why? You can't. You know. Look, there's no business without the customer. The customer pays my salary, literally. Feed my kids, send them to school. They are my boss. They are my true boss.
It's the way you think about the customer.
Customers are always right, remember?
I didn't say that.
That's what I was going to say.
I didn't say that.
How do we balance the idea? Because it looks like we grew up business from text.
Yeah.
Here, customers are always right. But in the marketplace, sometimes... Mm-hmm. Do you get contrary opinion?
Yeah, I don't believe customers are always right. I think that sometimes customers are always right. And I'll tell you what I mean.
Okay.
I cannot correct a customer's feeling. If a customer feels this way, the customer feels that way, whether they are right or wrong, they feel that way. So they are right. It doesn't mean that the facts are right also. It is my job to then talk to the customer and educate the customer and walk the customer through it. Of course, there are some unreasonable people that will not listen, that will throw a tantrum. It's my job to find a middle ground.
Yeah.
Or my job sometimes to draw a line in the sand. I'll give you two instances. A customer had an issue with us, and the customer went and hired a lawyer, and the lawyer wrote us. And every law case that comes to Waka now, I get notified. Like, literally, I get a long email documenting, the legal team will have investigated, telling me what happened. And often I send them, send me the customer's number. I understand there's a lawyer involved, whatever. I pick up the phone and I call the customer, especially when I see that we goofed. Because sometimes we don't get it right 100% of the time. Mm. We have instances where we goofed. Maybe somebody forgot to do something. And I call the customer and say, Oga, we goofed. There's no reason to drag this thing. Eh? What can I do to make it good? One customer told me, I want 2 business class return tickets to Canada. Business class on BA, specific. I looked at the merit of the case. I looked at what had happened. And I said, done. Because they are our customer. And the customer said to me that you are my travel agent for life. Mm-hmm. You know, I had an instance where the customer bought a ticket. Bought a ticket yesterday, came back today and said, I want a full refund. The customer, we told the customer that, look, your ticket, you bought a non-refundable ticket, and there's email actually telling you that it's a refundable ticket, it's a non-refundable ticket, that if you wanted to refund it, you can refund it same day of issuance, you can still refund that ticket. But once it crosses overnight, it becomes, the non-refundable trigger comes to life. And there's email trail documenting that you went and carry lawyer and I chose, and I called and I explained to you that it's a non-refundable ticket. That we can refund the taxes, we can do some long jump, you know, but the core of the money spent cannot be recovered. But the ticket is still valid. We can reroute the ticket, you can send it somewhere else, but there are rules around rerouting the ticket. There's, you know, you have to show proof that you have visa to some places. Like, what can we do to make this go away? Like, what can I do to help? And the customer just started shipping for me. And I'm very patient over the phone because I don't know if I'm being recorded on the other end. And I listened, but you know, the customer went on and on and on and on. And I saw myself that there was no reasonable solution because it's a non-refundable ticket. I had spoken to the airline before I called, because I called the airline to say, can you do something for me? Can you give me an exception? The customer said, Bio, we have used all our exceptions for you this year. There's no more. Like, you know, like, yeah. And I said, okay. I said, look, this is what I can do. I can give you half of the value back. We'll take the loss. It's a non-refundable ticket. And I can't change the name to my name. I use the ticket. Yeah. That's the truth. You can't change the name on ticket. True. And the customer said, no, if you don't give me 100% of my money, we will die in court. We'll do this. We are still in court. Because the customer, I understand the feeling. They want their money back. But they must understand my too, that I can't give you the money back because the money has been paid to the airline. And the airline is saying they're not giving it back. We can fight for you. We'll do all we can. We'll give you value. But there are times where we just can't win with a customer, because there's a customer that whenever this customer sends us email, literally I'm always in copy, he would start by abusing all of us and our mothers and our father. I'm not joking. I am not joking. I have never responded. I always go to the issue. Like the customer says, I've emailed you 2 times. You have not responded, blah, blah, blah. And I'll jump on it and say, we're going to attend to this immediately. I'll call somebody in customer service. But the customer keeps coming back. Look, brother, that customer, I'm not joking. I'm not joking. I receive an email from him every single week. I think he buys tickets on behalf of people. But he will start by abusing us. That say, your fathers would die. But me, I'll just say, okay, what's the problem here? Okay, he wants to do a date change. Okay, they are reaching out to the airline for the date change. Blah, blah, blah. I say, okay, we're on top of this. I'm on top of it. I say, thank you, Mr. Bayo. Next week, he has got another ticket. Next week, he has got another ticket. Baba, that's my customer.
Addictive demand.
If you abuse me, it's okay. Mm. There's nothing abuse. Like, words don't break my bone, man. Mm. Like, I do my business. However, at Wave, I had a customer that came into my beach and slapped one of my waiters on the ass. I threw that customer out. Now, out. You see, again, so that's why I say customers are always right. I understand the emotion that you like. I get it. But I can't let you do that to my staff. No. Again, so customers are always right, but they're not always right. Right, but you must respect them, because at the end of the day, that guy that is abusing me probably gives us maybe 200 million a year. Come on, for 200 million, there's a lot you can do. You can abuse me. I will not get emotional about it. Like, just keep bringing the business. Sometimes I even insulate the staff from it, the other staff from it, like, and just make them deal with me directly, because I'll give them to Ife or give them to somebody that I know, and I want them that this one will abuse me a little bit too, but don't worry. Don't worry. If it's too much, send them back to me. Yeah, because it's what it is. But at the end of the day, look, I'm in the business of servicing them.
So, I want to focus on the industry a little bit. You have your skin in the game, and there's a lot of complaints around flight ticket, the cost it takes to fly from Africa from within Africa.
Expensive, yeah.
It's quite expensive. It's almost equivalent to the cost of flying.
It's cheaper sometimes to fly to London.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Why is that? One. Secondly, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine from Poland, and he spoke about flying from Poland to Germany, the cost. You know, he got a ticket. He said he paid $15 yep. for a ticket. Mm-hmm. I said, how early did he book? He said, maybe like a month.
Yeah.
I've never heard that in my entire life. $15.
Yeah.
And I was shocked. Then I started asking myself the question, why is he really, and you know, one of the fastest businesses, mobility.
Yeah.
You have to move. We're talking about AFTA. That's the African Continental Trade mm-hmm. Agreement. If I want to do business with a fellow Ghanaian, I have to be able to move to Ghana. I don't need friction. Road, air, sea.
Yeah.
Why is it so? I need your expertise to explain. Yeah.
Look, let's go back to the laws. Okay, let me start from Europe.
Yeah.
Europe has domesticated their flights. Domestication of flight within Europe means that the way you fly to Lagos to Abuja for 100K
yeah.
is the way they fly within Europe. That simple.
Okay.
There's no interconnected taxes. When you fly above a country on the international, you pay taxes to that country. So when you fly over a country, just fly over because you're going to talk to their tower. Pay. So for every country you fly over, so when you're going to Ghana, you pay Benin, you pay Togo, you pay Ghana. There's airport charges, there's parking charges, there's departure airport charges, arrival airport charges. All those things add up to the price of your ticket. Some decisions need to be made in Africa from the country standpoint. But what they've done is, in Europe, is they've domesticated that their flights between Poland and Germany is like Lagos to Abuja. Domesticated. There's no, we are not making money from those. You only make money when you fly out, in and out
of Europe.
Of Europe. But within Europe, no charge. That, if we do that in West Africa, trust me, a lot of charges will go away. The price of tickets will drop. You know, within Africa, it will drop. There's also the problem of demand.
Okay.
You see, if you ever fly to certain parts of Africa from here, especially the ones that have direct, it's never full. Now, we say price, but it's not full. Right? Should the airline, the fuel that they use when they fly, a full plane and half plane is still the same. The cost is still the same.
True.
So they have to manage that by doing revenue management on that cost. Those things add up to the cost of flight. Now, booking early is always the best thing. I'll do a quick plug now. That's why we have Pay Small Small. Yeah. If you don't have the money today, you can plan your trip and do Pay Small Small and book your flight early. Booking early is always great because what happens is that the airline is set up in such a way that as demand rises for the flight, the price goes up. So basically, as the flight gets full, the price goes up, right? It's like a linear path because supply is constant. So, you know, it's 300 seats, it's 300 seats. So again, they maximize revenue by that. They call it booking class. So different booking class, Tango, Uniform, Whiskey, you can put 20 seats in Tango and in Uniform. My airline guys will kill me because I've mixed up the order, but just follow the process. I apologize. So they'll put 20 seats in Tango, that can be $100, 50 seats in Uniform, that can be $300, let's say 100 seats in Whiskey. So when they sell, the first 50 people that come to buy will find Tango fares. Cheaper, right? Then when you come and say, oh, you come later, you buy Uniform. Few days to the flight, you buy Whiskey, which can be, Whiskey can be $1,000 and Uniform can, Tango can be $100. What then typically happens, why we always get into trouble, is a customer that bought Tango ticket for $100. Now says, I want to change my flight. But on the day they want to change to, it's only Whiskey that is available. You then tell them that they have to pay $900 to change their flight. They just do a tantrum like, you want to scam me? But it's not that. It's the availability on that day is limited, and that's how they do revenue management. So again, going back to your point around the cost of flight, you know, there's a lot of work that needs to happen in Africa. I say that we don't need to do it all at once. We don't need to try to boil the ocean. We should start with, where do we fly to? Togo. There's a flight to Togo through Askai. Start with Ghana. Start with Ivory Coast. Domesticate it. Wait 2 years. Let's see what happens. Let the flight to go to Ghana be the same thing to go to Abuja. It's the same flight time. About the same flight time.
Yeah, actually.
Let's see what happens. You see that? We wake up on weekend and say, guy.
Let's see what happens. What does it mean? The let's see what happens. Are you talking about?
Let me tell you what's going to happen. Okay. You wake up on weekend and be like, and I have more money. Maybe I go Ghana.
Oh, bah! Demand would increase.
Then what happens is that there will be more capacity on the route because Epis will be full, AWA will be full, Askai will be full, right? Other airlines will be saying that, Ibom 2 will be full. And I'll say, let me put my plane on that route, right? Local players will say, we're losing routes, right? Meanwhile, people that have to business in Abuja will still go to Abuja, right? What will happen is that, we then saying that, where should we go for vacation? We'll go to Accra. Accra people say, where are we going for vacation? Let's come to Lagos. You're in and out to start getting, they don't need visa. Remember, you start getting up. But it's a gradual process because it builds. You know, start saying, I go to Accra, 70K. I'm doing promo, 60K, Accra. You just say, what am I doing? I've never been to Accra, let's go. Most Nigerians have never been to Accra.
Yeah, true.
He doesn't say, let's go. Let's go. Let's go. Let's go and do a weekend. Ivory Coast. Imagine Ivory Coast was 80K during Nations Cup. More people will go. Imagine when we do stuff in Lagos in this next December. Right? Come to Lagos from Ivory Coast is 80K. More people will come from Ivory Coast into Lagos for 30 December. More people will come from Ghana into Lagos. More people come from Benin. More people, Benin, there's no flight technically. There's no direct flight. Yeah. More people come from Togo. Let us domesticate West Africa first. See, flying within West Africa is cheap. Flying to Gambia is 200K, 150K. We'll go to Gambia. Their coastline is beautiful. We'll go to Senegal. Right, you go to Dakar and go have a great time. Senegalese and the Gambians will come. And then we start to do trade. I said it, I was on TV yesterday morning and I talked about it. When you fly from here to Ivory Coast, there is more cargo going on the plane than humans. From here to Ivory Coast. That tells you the amount of trade potential that happens. Even with the price. Now imagine if the price of travel drops. And that's the future. Again, more work needs to be done. We need to get the right people in place, get the right conversations going. The ministers of every country must be proponents of this. They've signed some BASA agreement. They've signed a couple of agreements to do this, but they've just not implemented. I think those are the things that we need to push for. And if we do that, then we can have more inter-Africa travel. Like, there's no reason why traveling to South Africa should be more expensive than going to London.
Ethiopian Airways.
Yeah.
They've gotten it right. It looks like the business, call it the business or the institution, is like the holy grail of the Ethiopian economy. It's like what is literally looks like what is literally holding the Ethiopian economy. What did they do right? How did they?
They've done it for a long time. So number one, don't discount that. They've done it for a long time. There's a lot of years of experience. I don't know how long. I can't remember off the top of my head how long Ethiopian Airlines have been flying. They've been flying for a long time. They have experience. They also have part-owned ASKI in Togo.
Yeah.
They've flown for a long time. They have expertise. They have pilots. They have that. Nigeria has some part of that. So Nigeria too has a long history of flying, but we don't have a national carrier. I think, I'm one of those people that don't like to talk about challenges. I like to talk about opportunity.
Mm.
So I like to always switch my gears and talk more about opportunity. The opportunity we have, number one, is our airport can't do airport transfer. So let me tell you what transfer is. I buy a ticket that says I'm going Ghana, Lagos, London. When you land from Ghana to Lagos, you have to pass immigration. You can't sit at the back. When you fly to Ethiopia, you can sit at the back of, you don't pass immigration, just sit at the back and then board your next flight. In Lagos, you can't do transfer within our airports. Those are capabilities that needs to be built. Right? And even before we get ready for a national carrier, because what should happen is that we should create feeder routes. Is that, look, our local regional planes can bring people from Ghana, people from all the regions, bring them into Lagos, and then you can get on a BA, you can get on a Lufthansa, you can get on this. I will feed, basically we call it co-share agreements. You can do co-share agreement. And again, if we had a national carrier, EPIS can then go bring people from somewhere to this place and then drop them to a national carrier because they have a co-share agreement or do those kind of things. There's a lot more that can happen, but we need to build more capabilities for our airport to do more. Investors follow where opportunity is.
Yeah.
We just need to demonstrate that there's opportunity that the private sector can take the rest over.
When you said private sector, I was going to say it that there's always these conversations around government kind of not knowing how to run businesses. Is that, do you believe that, especially for the airline industry?
I think that is proven across the world. Mm. Like, I will always talk about Nigeria, blah, 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 and I say, there's nowhere that any government agency is better than any private agency. Like, let's be honest. Like, let me not call out my own country, but there's just nowhere. Ethiopia might be a different use case. But Emirates. Again, it's run.
Emirates?
Saudi Aramco?
I would question that. The biggest airlines in the world, right? The Deltas of the world, the United of the world are private. The BAs of the world is private. Virgin is private. I can go on and on and on and on private. We can talk about some that are government owned. But what typically happens is that you find out private interest. They run it like a private company. You don't run like a government company. They don't run like government entity. So look, I believe that yes, we can probably do something. Number one in Nigeria, but we need to hire the right people. We need to get the right people in there. We need to understand that, you know, knowing how to fly and run the business of flight are two different things. I'll say that anywhere in front of anyone, knowing how to fly a plane and the engineering of flying a plane is different from running a business of flying. Running a business is the commercial element of it. I can tell you for free. I don't know how to. There's a system we use called Amadeus, or Sabre, or Galileo. I don't know how to use it, but I run the business. I understand the business. I cannot even recite the full booking class, but I understand the business. There's no part of this business that you can talk to me about. I don't know how to fly a plane. Again, we understand the commercial does not mean that I know how to fly.
Yeah.
The people that know how to fly should be in the business of flying the plane. People that know how to run the commercials should be in the business of running the commercials. But we should not discount the fact that we need to have people that understand the business of flying, the business of getting passengers on board, the business of getting the commercial going and making money from it. Because I think that's what is oftentimes more lacking. That we don't hire those people that understand the commercial. We just have an idea. We buy airplanes and we think we can just put in the air. We can. It will fly. But then it will fly empty.
Now, Something you said one time somewhere is that innovation is not complex.
No, it's not.
And that saying the craft in itself, the engineering and the flying is totally different from the business.
Yeah.
So the piece small.
Mm-hmm.
That is profound, very profound. Mm-hmm. I think it's very novel. Mm-hmm. You also say that you run an hybrid travel agency.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how has bringing innovation to the travel space, because you are clearly a market leader, does it put you under a form of pressure to keep on innovating?
Yeah.
Because people sort of like copy and paste. Basically.
I wish they did, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I wish they did. I wish they did. I wish they did more of that. Because competition breeds innovation. Look, and I always say that oftentimes when there's no competition, we tend to be complacent. Right? And I can go on and on. Let's talk about juice. Back in the day, we used to drink Five Alive. Then the price of Five Alive went up. Achivita came as a competitor. Now Achivita is winning the market. Now somebody else, Fruta, is now in the market. There's other guys in the market. They're all competing. What happens that the consumer wins? Comes down with pricing, comes down with innovation, consumer wins. You see, in travel, I say that Wakana, obviously, we don't want to be local players. We don't want to be local champions. We don't want to be guys that just win locally. We think about the global landscape. We think about the African customer. We think about the foreign customer. We think about all of them in one gulp. And we continue to look for ways. Oftentimes, the things that we are launching is innovative. But oftentimes, when you really sit down and think about it, are we the first to do it? Probably not. Flying a plane. We're not the ones building the goddamn plane. Somebody has built the plane. We just learn how to fly. Right? Oftentimes, there are models abroad, there are models even locally, that we just need to copy and adapt. Is the adaptation then it becomes the interpretation part of you? Do you truly understand your customer behavior? You know, I know we talked about the customer first. It goes back to understanding the customer. Wakana has 44 locations in Nigeria. 44. And counting. The goal this year is to get to 60 locations. The question is, why does a tech company have 60 locations? Because the consumer likes to talk to us. We have a 300-man call center that runs 24/7. Why? If everything can be done on your mobile app, the consumer sometimes, after they've booked, so after they've paid, after they've gotten their ticket, still wants to call you and say, hi, yeah, me see. Can you please get Yemisi on the phone? I know I talked to her last week. Get Yemisi on the phone. How are you, madam? Look, I bought the ticket. I'm going to fly from Lagos to this. Is it okay? Yes. And you tell her that, let me check again in my system. Oh, it's okay. Maybe you have your UK visa. Says yes. Says okay. Ah, you are sure everything is fine. I will not have a problem. He says, yes, you have a problem. Just make sure your suitcase is not weighing more than 50 kg each. I'm sorry, 23 kg each. I think in pounds. So I was thinking 50 pounds. So 23 kg each, blah, blah, blah. And the consumer wants to talk to the consumer. Some of them, one morning I was driving, I live very close to the office for convenience, of course. So I was driving in front of the office and I saw somebody sitting there looking at our sign, you know, on a Sunday morning. Anybody else's church. So I parked. And I said, okay, what can I do for you? Can I help you? He said, so I made the booking online, but I want to come and pay. I mean, I don't use my ears to hear money. My laptop was in the car. I held the laptop because it's going to open the travel center in front of the office. I put the travel center. The man walked in. I said, I put my laptop. The man said, okay. It looks like you work here, you know, because so that they opened the office for me, set it up. I had to go look for the address, find their POS. I said, how do you want to pay? POS or transfer? The guy said, transfer. And the guy brought out his phone and did the transfer to Wakana and paid. After we finished the transaction, I got him his ticket, everything, everybody was good. He got hotel, everything, hotel, even got a car to pick him up there. And I said, but okay, where did you come? He said, he came from Festac to Lekki One. I said, but why didn't you just pay online? He said, I'll pay 6 million online. When?
Oh, I see.
Oh, my goodness. And so
all of this is data for you.
Yes. The man just told me, look, he guys said, but when I looked at the system, I saw that he has booked multiple tickets from us. I was like, but you thought, he said, I always come to your store to come and pay. First that location was closed today. Because it's Sunday. Mm. And I wanted to buy the ticket today. Because tomorrow now, my wife will start telling me that the house needs milk. Mm. So before we spend this money, let me come and buy the ticket. You drove all the way from Festac. You cannot discount the African behavior. Mm. You can't. And it goes back to customer. Is understanding the customer before you build innovation. Because you can build innovation all you want. But you see, if the customer is not ready to leapfrog with you, your innovation will die. You'll be too early.
Mm.
So you must take the customer, bring them to your innovation, and then work with them to leapfrog to that future. And that's how we think about it. But innovation is not complex. Innovation is a simple thing. It's finding easier ways to do the things that we do today. It's finding a more efficient way to do the things that we do today. Like the things that we do today. Like finding, you know, yesterday some of my team guys did a demo for me on something and it was just a little improvement. They put ChatGPT into something that we manually do. Like we do SEO. We created an SEO server on the back of AI. And as I watched it, I was like, we're not the first to do it. But simple innovation that can just continue to move the envelope forward. Simple innovation. Right? So sometimes I people watch. I watch what my guys spend a lot of time on. And I ask, is there no faster way to do this? And I ask that quite a bit. Like at my front desk, I spent some time at front desk a couple of days. First, going to laugh at this. And I saw that often that when guests comes, they have to get up or call the person on mobile. And I was like, why can't, there's a simple login system at the reception where you can come, you can say, who are you looking for? I'm looking for Mr. Bayo. They put Mr. Bayo's name on there. If it's the first email that needs to go, Esther or whoever, or me. Yeah, and I get an email. And if I don't respond to that email in 5 minutes, I'll get a ring. If that technology doesn't exist, we can build it. That's why we're a tech company, right?
Yeah.
You know, and again, what have I solved? I've solved the receptionist having to get up, climb the stairs to go and see Esther, or climb, you know, I've resolved that problem. So now, do I need two receptionists or one?
Mm.
I need one. And I can probably say, do I need a receptionist at all? This thing can be touch and self-service. I don't know. But that's innovation. That's true innovation. And if you think about innovation like that, is the simple thing, solving simple problems and pushing the envelope forward. But you have to take customer anecdote. You have to understand the customer behavior. You have to understand customer's pain point. You have to understand the customer's behavior, right? And use that to model your innovation, or else you are innovating for yourself.
Mm.
Oftentimes, we innovate for ourselves. So. Like, it's just, yeah. We are not the customer.
Yes.
True. Sure.
Unfortunately, you're not the customer.
You're not. Because you buy your own thing. You buy your own thing.
What do you think about AI with what is happening? Do you think... So I saw a report and they said the person, what's her name? I'm trying to remember. First post in India, there's this lady, Palki Sharma. Yeah. She was saying that AI or ChatGPT is gradually making us dumber.
Yeah.
That was what she said. And I looked at my life personally. I saw, okay, 5 years ago, I know how what I used to do, how far I used to go to research and all that. But what do you think about AI? How do we balance it?
There's no balance. AI is the future. So, yeah. And you know what? I stood on a stage last year and I said to them that AI in Africa, it took a while. And I look back and I said, I was wrong. I was dead wrong. AI is the future.
For person we never told.
It is the future, even for them.
Okay.
And it's the evolution of it because decisions are made with AI now.
Yes.
Your politicians are using AI to make decisions, to write reports, to write proposals, to do all these things. Like, even to the common man, they're going to be influenced by AI. Look, I don't think AI can self-think. When I say self-think, it means that you have to still give it a task.
Yeah.
You have to still ask it a prompt. You have to still ask it a question. You must use it to develop something and a logarithm and it goes out and do its own thing. And if you build an AI agent, but it is making people that use AI will take jobs from people that don't use AI. And it's the reality. It's here. Look, my entire marketing team is powered by AI. And I'm pushing the envelope for them to go more. Like before, we used to buy. Think about it, Shutterstock. We used to go and buy images from Shutterstock.
Yes.
Shutterstock just emailed us and said we owe them money. We're like, hey, which money is that? He said there's one contract we signed, even though we never used it. And my guys were like, Shutterstock is about to shut down.
So they're trying. To.
It's the truth because why do I need Shutterstock anymore? I can generate images. I can generate images that meet my specifications, not just the picture that you have. I can say I want a man that is holding ice cream in his mouth and holding a child in his hand and is behind a waste basket in London, and I can put Oxford Street in London, I would generate it. I'll say no. I'll go back and amend the prompt. Use Sora, use Meet Johnny, use Vio. And then Vio. I've not even played with Vio yet. Like I play with Meet Johnny quite a bit. Wow. And
Meet Johnny is gradually going down the drain, Tev.
Disruption is disrupting disruption.
Yeah. Yes. So you cannot just sit down and say, I think it's time for us to sharpen our skills and learn how to use AI. You now have to do the critical thinking and let somebody do the hard work for you. But you see something, nothing will still discount thinking. Nothing will still discount thinking. And the world of buying and selling, AI is just an enhancement. Somebody still needs to buy, somebody needs to resell, and somebody needs to sell, buy again. So but AI is coming. It's real.
What's the next thing now?
For you? For me?
Yeah. That should be looking at.
I'm looking for something big.
Politics?
No.
At least August 28th is something. 22nd.
I don't think I'm rich enough for politics, and I'll tell you why. I don't think I should ever get into politics without having enough substantial personal wealth. And I'll tell you why. I think that if I get into politics, I want to make a change. I would let's get to politics in a place where I am making substantial change to my fellow countrymen and women. And I believe that if you go into politics, like I said, if you go into politics hungry, I'm still very hungry. Right? I don't have enough money to pay my bills for the next 8 years. Right? If I get into politics and I win, and I hold political office and I still have to rely on salary, I believe that I'll be controlled. I believe that if I have enough personal wealth, it's a belief, if I have enough personal wealth my own that I'm fine. I'm like, look, I'm doing service for my country for 8 years, then I can do it. I can do it without looking for personal gain, looking for personal interest. And that's how I think, and maybe it's a noble thinking, that when I get to that point of personal wealth, then I think politics, I think that until we all get into politics, all of us, not just me, everybody listening, you get into politics and actually start to influence, get into ESCOs, influence, local government election is coming. I'm only seeing APC flyer. I'm not seeing any other political party. And I'm saying to myself, this is exactly what annoys me. Why I will continue to support APC. Like, why would you say you are a opposition party and you have no candidate? I've not seen any of them's
flyer,
anything, anywhere. But when it comes to presidential, they want to be president. I am closer to my local government chairman than to the governor. Because local government chairman is right behind my house. Yeah. Impact me. I know my local government chairman. You know? And I believe that that's where politics actually starts from, is for us to control local, control state, then before we now go federal. But everybody wants to go and fight for federal when the local government chairman is the one making your life miserable. Yeah. He's the one making your road not tolerable. Yeah. Nobody's talking about him. And that's why I believe that we must all get involved in politics. The next election's coming up, I think July something, we should all go out and vote. We should all go out and vote and exercise our constitutional rights. Because, again, I think that's true to politics. That's true to politics. Because, again, if we leave politics in the hands of mediocre people, then we lose the right to complain. You lose the right to complain. For everyone that has run for president, I respect them. I know I say I will support them, but I respect them. But at least they tried to put their... There's clear evidence that they tried. What have you done? What have you done? Did you even fight to make sure that the result of your polling booth counted? Yeah, because again, until then we don't have a country. We only have complainers on Twitter. And everybody can be an alligator behind the keyboard. Yes, anybody can. Anybody can be a keyboard warrior.
So I give you kudos. Why? Because I know quite a lot of people in the diaspora that talked about how we should do business in Nigeria, how is this how to
but do But they don't do it. Do it.
But you're there.
They don't do it. Yeah, they don't do it. Those people in diaspora, they actually piss me off. Maybe because I'm ex-diaspora. Whenever they come in, like, oh, Niger. I'm like, what has Niger done to you? So one day, one guy wanted to enter one of our spaces, and they told him that the fee is 5,000 naira. And I was like, why do I have to pay to go in there? Like, but you see that the place is nice. You see that it's clean. You see that it costs money to us to do it. And the guy started arguing that you don't do this in Europe. But I said, you're arguing over 2 euro. 2 euro. Then the guy took a step back. I said, you are arguing with this girl over 2 euro. And you continue to complain about Nigeria. 2 euros. 2 euros. Two. And I told him, you probably give this money away as a tip in a restaurant. Look, that's what people, when they come to Nigeria, they just complain, they complain, they complain, they complain, they complain. I'm like, come fix it with us.
Yes. Yeah.
Come join us to fix it. You don't need to get into government. Start a business and be responsible to the people. Pay them on time. Show them what wealth looks like. Grow them. Grow their talents. Grow their skills. And then send them out there. Right? But they don't come and just complain. That's why in December, I don't look at them. I'm rolling my eyes like...
I'm making money.
Like I just came back from America. I'm like, brah. A lot of Nigerians have 2 passports too. Calm down. Calm down. I'll be calming down.
True.
Calming down.
Very true.
Calming down. We just don't have accents. Just accent has gone away. Yeah.
No, but there are people that don't even have 2 passports. But they just go to the UK for a week and come back with in it.
Yeah. I just want it to exist. But there's a lot of Nigerians that have 2 passports. There's a lot of Nigerians that have multiple citizenship, that have dual citizenship, and they live here, they work here, we live here, but they come and just complain. And I say to them that, bro, I've never had an incident of almost being killed in Nigeria. In America, multiple times.
Wow.
You're in a club, they start shooting. There was a Nigeria is so unsafe. I'm like, really? You live in Texas, motherfucker? Bro. Really? I went to a car wash one day and this guy brought a gun out and was chasing a kid. Like with a gun in his hand. And I was like, dang it. Yeah. And in London, they rob you in train station. You wear a Rolex in train station. They try to collect it in your train station. When you're going to train station, you put your iPhone and your wristwatch in your pocket in London. But they come to Nigeria and then say, complain that Nigeria is unsafe. And they've never been robbed yet. So again, I say that, look, we can't fix Nigeria when we keep complaining about it. Let's sell our country right. Sell it right. This is a place of amazing stuff. I'm not saying bad things don't happen. Mm-hmm. Look at the killing in Benue. Bad things happen, but we must have a positive outlook of our country. Very positive outlook. I am pro Nigeria. I'm pro Africa. I'm pro black people.
I was going to say you're so Afrocentric.
I'm very, 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 very. I believe that our liberation starts from us liberating ourselves in our minds and thinking that we can compete side by side with every other race and not thinking ourselves as being inferior to the other race and seeing ourselves that we can go global too, we can compete on the global scale. So yeah, somebody's going to have an opinion about why maybe I'm too positive, I'm too not, but I do not be negative. I just know positivity. And when I mean negativity, we either conquer it or we find a way around it.
Gen Z, we're about rounding off now, but Gen Z's, how do you... You look like somebody who can walk very much.
Oh, God forbid. I cannot. I cannot. I love them to death, but I cannot. I don't have the patience, what? The temperament, the everything. The Gen Alpha are more interesting to me, though.
Oh, really?
Oh, God. God, my kids just taught me some slangs. Skibidi, Sigma. They call me the true Sigma. My son looked at me and said, Daddy, you're the true Sigma. I'm like... What does that mean? You're the real one. You're the great one. Yeah. I'm like, wow. Like, look, Gen Z's are just different. Interesting group of people. There's some of them that are great and amazing. Yeah. And some of them that are practically useless. But it's our fault. Not my generation, because I think we gave birth to alphas.
Yes.
The generation before me gave birth to the disease.
Yeah.
And I think it's their fault because it was the true age of not being at home, not raising your kids, you know, committing to work and not spending time with family. I know I've talked about lack of balance for greatness. So it's like I'm contradicting myself at the end. But you see, I look at the Gen Zs and I see some of them and I say, I'm going to raise my children better. Even as busy as I am, I make time for my kids. This morning, if I came to the house, we're eating breakfast together, you know, as every single chance I get that I can spend an hour extra and spend another 30 minutes, I do that. I talk to them. I take them to the office. I let them see my business. I talk to them about my business. I show them what we're doing. They see me go to work. I don't become an invisible father that does not see the struggle. They see the struggle. They follow me to say, like my son was asking me, you were on site last night till late because you were casting. I was like, but you're not the one carrying. I said, sometimes just being there, just witnessing it, you make changes, you do this, and it was like, wow, okay, I want to follow you to the next one, and I'll take him with me, and he'll stay with me, not just my son now. I don't believe that I should raise my son different from my daughter. I believe my daughter should come with. We went to a restaurant this week, and the restaurant owner came to our table and said, hey, how was the experience? And my daughter was like, oh, can I give you some feedback? And she went on and on and on about the food. She talked about what was good. My son jumped in and said, oh my goodness, the garlic bread was amazing. This was amazing. But this one was just too dry. This one wasn't great. There's not enough fat here. And I sat there and I looked at them because they were like, that. They now said at the end that, look, if you're making changes, we'll come back. And I'm like, that's my kid. That's my child. That's my children are 11 and 10. That's my child. That's me. That's who I am. They will tell you the truth. If you ask them, if you ask them, they won't say anything. But if you ask them, you will hear it. Ah, you will hear it.
I think you should have one more.
One more child?
11, 10.
Ah, you know. If my wife, you hear what you just said now. Ah, my wife that is doing 40 years this year, that is, hey. No, we're done. But again, and I sat there, like, proud for my wife was telling her that, I was like, no, let her speak. And she spoke at my 11-year-old kid, spoke at mine about the quality of the food, said, talk about what was good, talk about what could change. And she didn't just say what was bad, she talked about what they should change. Mm-hmm. She didn't just say, oh, she said it was terrible, that one particular cut of meat that we had was terrible. And she said why it was terrible and what they should do to fix it, because we like to cook, because we cook together.
Wow.
We cook, my children and I, we smoke meat together, we grill together, we do a lot of things together. And so they know, my daughter can cook better than most adults. Like now, she makes the best omelette. The best, bounce, we call it bouncing baby boy.
Oh shit.
Like when you put it on your yam like this, we bounce it. And you know, and when it comes out of the east, and if it's all round, perfectly round, she tell you, oh God, I got it wrong. She make it perfectly round. She's 11. And you consider that she's being raised by richer parents than my parents, at least, right? That she should not know how to do those things. We don't let people help them make their bed. We let them do it themselves, and so that they know the value. And I think people should raise The Gen Z, I think some of them were not just raised well. I think that we should raise their children. We should do better for the next generation. Okay? This is long ago.
Here we go.
Profound.
Here we go.
You've kept me here for so long.
We've touched personal life. We've touched business. We've touched national development. We've touched parenting. Wow. Like I said, you are awesome.
Thank you.
You're very awesome.
Thank you. Next time, pay me.
Definitely. You've heard it from the king himself. He said he doesn't like to be called heavyweight. Okay. The weight of his industry. I'm taking the word heavy. He said it. Bayo Adedeji, the GCEO of Wakanow. He's also the founder of Dundu Nation. He's got lots of businesses, lots of accolades. He's been able to pay. He's a lot of people are on his payroll. And imagine how much of a national nation builder he is in the Nigerian economy. That is what you get from the Frankly Business Podcast. And that's what you get from the season 2 of the Frankly Business Podcast. Dr. Aderibube, what do you have to tell your people?
Wow. Profound. And every insight came with enough energy to get you moving. I was sitting here and just right now I'm rethinking a lot of things. I'm like, next time I meet Bayo, I have to tell him, Lion, this was where I was.
I like it. I like that.
This is where I am now.
I like that. Like that.
This is where I was in this time. This is where I am now. And thank you. And I'm sure that a lot of our viewers also will feel the same way. Yep. Whether you like it or not. The Lion.
Yes, sir.
You are raising people in the order. In the order of your kingdom. And I am.
Did you not pay me? Once you start making that money, I don't know my account number of that, but you can ask me online. Just send me a few millions. You know, hey, help me. You know,
And they can send you a tithe because already you also went spiritual with us.
Yeah. It was church. Like, hey.
Yeah,
I like that. Yeah. I'll gladly, and I'm an orphan. So I think the Bible says that you can give orphans your tithe. So I'll gladly take it. Yeah. Gladly.
It's so
thank you for having me.
So good. Thank you very much for coming to the Frankly Business Podcast. That's what you get. Stay with us. Make sure you like, you share, you subscribe. Keep watching, keep learning, and keep growing. That's it on the Frankly Business Podcast. I'll see you on the next episode. Make sure you stay good. Cheers.